Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Hope everyone around you is keeping safe and well and healthy. How you doing? Are you recovered yet from the transfer deadline day madness? Wow. If you listened to the Arsecast Extra yesterday, you will have heard myself and James not feeling particularly confident that we were going to do anything in terms of incoming business. It was more hope than expectation, but we've signed Thomas Partey from Atletico Madrid. We activated his release clause by paying 50 million euros to La Liga, and we have brought him to North London. He will be an Arsenal player. He signed a 4-year contract, etc., etc. So we have to talk about that. We were going to do this for our Patreon members only, but when you do make a signing as big as that one, I think it's fair that we make this podcast available to everyone. If you feel like becoming a Patreon member, though, you can do that at patreon.com/arseblog. It costs £5 a month, and you get the Tactics podcast, ad-free podcast, Discord chat, live streams, all that kind of stuff, and it does support everything that we do here on the site as well. So without much further ado, we'll get into this one. Obviously, the Thomas Partey thing is going to be the main crux of the discussion, but we'll be talking about the transfer window in general, some of the deals that we've done, looking at it overall, the state of the squad as we go into, well, I was going to say the rest of the season, but between now and January, because there is another transfer window in January, of course, but that, you know, we can cross that particular bridge when we come to it. With me to discuss it all is first Andrew Allen. Hello, Andrew.
Hi there.
And we've got James. Hello, James.
Hello, guys.
James, let's start with you, because yesterday on the Arsecast Extra, we were not exactly confident that something was going to happen. We were a little bit, I suppose, negative might be a word that people might use, but it was more about just the lack of any insight into anything that was going on. It didn't seem like there was going to be a late move for anybody. So how surprised were you when Arsenal did what they did and put the wheels in motion to sign Thomas Partey yesterday? Yes.
I was quite surprised. I mean, I had said on the show a few times that the beauty of a release clause is you can go back to it, but I did not anticipate Arsenal doing that. And when it Charles Watts it was who broke the news that Arsenal were making a move for Thomas Partey, I kind of sat up in my chair and thought, here we go. And yeah, it's was a pretty dramatic final few hours. It's one of those where, you know, deadline days, when they pass and you're not involved, unless you're really happy with the business you've already done, they can be slightly somber days. But when there's a signing in the offing, suddenly it's all exciting. And delighted they got it over the line. I actually think, you know, when you look at our midfield, as we talked about yesterday, and the paucity of options that we have, I think it's a really, really important deal for Arsenal to have done.
Andrew, your thoughts just on the player and getting this done. Obviously, there was a big gap when we've decided to let Lucas Torreira go to Atletico Madrid, of course, as well. So a little bit of, not coincidence, but, you know, there was something going on there. And Matteo Guendouzi has joined Hertha Berlin. It left us with, as senior options, Granit Xhaka, Mohamed Elneny and Dani Ceballos. Ceballos, somebody who, you know, we all like, but he's not our player at the end of the day. So how important was it for Arsenal to do something in the midfield yesterday? And what do you make of Thomas Partey?
I think it was hugely important because, as you say, like, once you looked at the club ready to sanction the Torreira and Guendouzi departures, I was kind of thinking there's a gaping big hole here. We're really, really exposed. And, you know, the fact that we got to sort of midday and then 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and still there was nothing, I just sort of was a little bit resigned to the idea that we weren't going to do anything. And I thought that is a huge risk You know, I can see the way the conversation is going to go. The fans will be furious, and you know, it would generally have made our life a lot more difficult. As for what party's going to bring, I mean, the truth is, I mean, I remember watching him a couple of years ago when Arsenal played Atletico at the Emirates in the Europa League. At the time, I didn't really think a huge amount of him, to be honest. I don't think he was even playing in the centre of midfield. But, you know, it looks like on paper, and you look at some of the stats and you read some of the analysis of his game, that he's definitely going to bring us something that we don't really have. I think that kind of involves someone who's a bit more mobile. You know, I was having shivers at the idea, like a lot of people were, about the Jorginho transfer from Chelsea, which we were also linked with. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm excited. I'm really curious. I we've seen with Arteta over the course of the last few months what he can eke out of existing players. And I think with the right structure, you know, this guy was obviously a long-term target by the looks of things, so he must have a plan in mind for him. So I'm excited about all of that.
James, he is somebody that has been on the radar for a little while. Francis Cadjigal was, behind a big scouting report and recommending him to the club. So he's not somebody who is like, oh, shit, who are we going to get? Let's get somebody at the last minute. This is somebody who the club have been after, they're well aware of, they know his qualities, they know what he can bring. And, you know, I guess more specifically, they know what he can bring in, you know, in this particular squad.
Yeah, I mean, he was literally number one at the very top of the scouting department's recommendations this summer before they were all dispensed with. And, you know, Unai Emery was interested in signing him, but it didn't happen ultimately. And, you know, Arteta has been similarly convinced that this is the guy, and Edu's been convinced too. I mean, I think one of the really interesting things about him is that, unlike Aouar, who Arsenal were also looking at, he's 27 years old. He comes in as a very established player, you know, in the prime of his career, who's ready to make an instant impact. I think that was a factor in Arteta being convinced by this player. I think he values that experience. They've talked about him potentially being a leader, both on and off the pitch. So, you know, he's someone who's here and he's going to hit the ground running. I think the point made about Ceballos, that we don't actually own Ceballos as well, is a really good one. I mean, if you take that out, it's basically Elneny and Xhaka, isn't it, in terms of players that we own that we're prepared to pick in central midfield. So while Aouar, I think, is a really interesting player and appeals in a lot of respects, and I think in an ideal world, Arsenal would have both those players. We do, at least in people like, you know, Saka, have players who can operate in the more creative part of the midfield. So I just think, you know, it was one of those where I was sort of prepared to make my peace with the window being what it was, and, you know, we'll sort of muddle through with Elneny. But having a really established quality international player come in instead casts a very different light on the entire window. Really.
Yeah, I mean, look, he is 27 years of age, and I've seen some people express some concerns about that. But 27 is, you know, he's a long way from being finished by footballing standards, you know. And sometimes you need to have a player who can come in and do what you need him to do straight away. There's obviously an upside to bringing in a younger player who can develop and maybe become somebody who could generate funds for you if you want to sell them. But if you want to do what Arsenal want to do, which is get back into the Champions League, which is to improve the team straight away, I got no issue with the fact that he's 27. There's a really great thread that people should check out from David Cartledge, who's on Twitter at David JACA. And there are some really nice words in there, like confident, authoritative, essential. He talks about his ability to play in particular formations, especially in a 4-4-2, a 4-3-3, a 4-2-3-1. And it just strikes me that he is a player who will allow Mikel Arteta to use a back four. We saw it on Sunday, of course, against Sheffield United. But I think long-term, Arteta's wanted to use a back four. But part of the reason he hasn't done it is because of the defenders that we have. But also part of the reason is because of the midfielders that we have or haven't had. So I think this is a very interesting part of this guy's arrival.
Yeah, I mean, the continuation of finding flexible, versatile players certainly looks like it's going to be a common theme of the Arteta reign, doesn't it? I mean, Maitland-Niles, Willian, Saka. I mean, we've got a few now who can operate across the pitch. I think what you were saying about playing a four-man backline is really interesting. You know, I remember writing in the pre-season preview, you know, that that's something that I think Arteta wants to get back to using. I think also it's been really interesting the last couple of days watching Xhaka be the one who, one, got hooked at Anfield, didn't he? And then didn't start again the other day. So it feels to me like there might be something of a sort of laying the foundations there. Someone's going to have to make way. He obviously is really enamoured by what Elneny's doing at the moment, and I can kind of understand that because, you know, he's sort of come out of the blue and he's offered a, you know, a sort of Xhaka Ceballos hybrid. I think he's not super mobile, but he's got a bit more than Xhaka does, and he's also does have a bit of a kind of bit more about him in the final third, I think, sometimes, Elneny. So yeah, there's some interesting options there. I mean, I guess going forward, it's whether we expect Partey to really make, I mean, you seem to think he'll make an impact straight away and he'll be trusted straight away. I mean, he's going to come back from international duty. I personally don't think he'll be thrust straight into a game against Manchester City, but I don't know what you guys think about that.
I don't know. I guess it depends on, you know, what the travel situation is and how much he's done on international duty and, you know, whatever way Mikel Arteta wants to set up his team against Manchester City. But I do think when you bring a player like this in, he will be ready. He, you know, one of the things that David Cartledge says in his thread is his intelligence and his ability to adapt tactically to what Diego Simeone wanted. So, look, it might be a baptism of fire, but when you're a £50 million player, when you're 27 years of age, when you've been there, done that for a Champions League club like Atletico, I don't really see that it's impossible for him to come in and start that game.
Well, I mean, he's going to Turkey, isn't he, for an international game with Ghana. And at the moment, Turkey is on the UK's quarantine list. So,
but remember, footballers do have this...
you're right.
This exception thing. They can get a letter to say that they're, you know, immune or whatever, but
magically
they're not
immune. About that. So that's a good shout. So maybe he will be available. I mean, you know, Arteta, you know, he tends to favour stability in the team. He's not someone who rushes people in. But if you look at the facts, you know, he's already trusted Gabriel. I mean, that's, I think, the really encouraging thing about this signing. If you look at the spine of our team and you look at Gabriel, you look at Thomas Partey, you know, you look at the combination of sort of power and technical attributes and intelligence that those guys seem to bring, it just feels a lot more robust, a lot sturdier. And, you know, we finally seem to be signing the right type of players in the right type of areas.
Yeah, look, I would have liked to sign Aouar, but, you know, he's a creative player. And I think there is an element missing within our midfield when it comes to that. But I think as well, if you're looking for an instant upgrade on the players that we have in the positions or the position Partey is going to play in that deep role, we do have other players ahead who could perhaps fill that gap. I know we talked yesterday about Saka, James, but, you know, Willian could perhaps play more centrally. You get Pepe into the team. You've got Ceballos in there. You know, a midfield of Partey, Ceballos and Saka sounds quite exciting and new and, you know, full of promise and potential. So, you know, there is obviously room for improvement in all areas of the pitch, but maybe in the very short term, this is the kind of signing that we absolutely need.
And also, I think this is the deal that Arsenal ultimately felt they could do on deadline day. You know, they did try for Aouar, and it, for some reason, the numbers didn't stack up. And they went for Partey instead. I don't think that means they're not interested in Aouar moving forward. I don't think it means they're not going to look at adding more creativity in another window. But there is obviously just a limit to how much you can achieve in any one transfer window. And this is the player that they could get on the day. And it's a step forward.
Well, Andrew, I mean, it's an uncomplicated deal in many ways because of the release clause situation where you don't even have to negotiate with the other club. The release clause is there. You pay the release clause. The contract is terminated and you get the player. There has been some suggestion that Atletico Madrid were unhappy at the way that this went. Should we give a shit about that? Should we care about that? Is there an element of, well, there's a right way and a wrong way to do things? Should you communicate your desire or your willingness to activate a release clause and to take a player away from a club at the last minute? Or is that just the fucking harsh reality of football business? You know, if you have a release clause in a player's contract, you have to perhaps expect that this might be the case.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple of things there, isn't there? I mean, Arsenal would have loved to have paid less than what they have done and probably did try and have a conversation with Atletico Madrid about that. And they obviously said, no, he has a release clause. So ultimately, we did what we had to do. So on one level, I don't really care. On another, I mean, it's not a great look as a club to start building a reputation where you sort of, you know, I mean, we talk a lot about Arsenal's class and all of this stuff and the Arsenal way and doing things the right way, whether you're always doing things behind people's backs. I know that Man City got agitated as well about the fact that we didn't have a conversation with them about Arteta before turning up at his house in the middle of the night to get the deal done. Look, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, but I can see how it might look. And, you know, maybe further down the line, if we want to do business with an Atletico again, they may turn around and go, no, thank you. But let's deal with that at a later date. It doesn't really bother me. To be honest, I was enjoying reveling in it like everybody else was yesterday.
James, your thoughts on that? I mean, what do we make of Arsenal acting with such ruthlessness on the same day that they made a dinosaur redundant? And I'm not actually joking about that. I think the optics of both those things, could be construed as somewhat negative, if you like. I mean, there's an element of, you know, this is Arsenal, we're kind of flexing our muscles, we don't need to deal with you, so, you know, just be off with you. We can do what we want to do, and we're going to do it. But at the same time, as Andrew mentions, the Arsenal class that some people talk about isn't always evident.
Yeah, and, you know, Atleti really weren't happy. And I think from a diplomatic point of view, from a relationships point of view, the way in which Arsenal ultimately pursued this deal more than ruffled a few feathers. I have to say, as a fan, speaking just purely as a supporter, in the transfer market, I don't mind it. I feel like it's a very, very cutthroat world. It's tough, and Arsenal sometimes haven't been tough enough in those scenarios, and, you know, showing that they're prepared to throw their weight around a bit and behave, you know, like a big club in some ways. That aggression, I think, is welcome. On the subject of the dinosaur and, you know, the associated cost cutting, how you weigh, you know, the sort of financial situation at Arsenal, the redundancies we've seen, the cost cutting in other departments, against this massive outlay, I think it's really individual, you know, how you see that. From Arsenal's point of view, they've always said, the reason we're taking these measures is to ensure we can strengthen the team. And as a fan, of course, you want to see the team strengthened. But on a human level, it's difficult not to feel frustration on the part of people who think, well, I was told you couldn't afford to pay my salary, and it's a minuscule fraction of what you've outlaid on the first two.
Yeah, it is one of those things. And the financial aspect of this deal is quite interesting, isn't it? Because to activate a release clause, you've got to pay it all. You know, it's not like you can go up and say, yeah, we'll activate it and we'll pay you, you know, X amount over X number of years. You've got to pay it all. So that's what Arsenal did yesterday. Nigel Phillips from the Arsenal Supporters Trust tells me that the restructuring of the debt that we did during the summer with the stadium that KSE did freed up some cash that was in accounts that were there to, secure accounts for security for bondholders or whatever it was. So that might be where that money has come from. Do you worry, Andrew, at all about, you know, this being part of a rising debt that's on the club? Or is this just kind of what we have to do if we want to get back to where we want to get to on a sporting level? Is this something we should really, as fans, be concerned about? Or, you know, do you have to take a more holistic view of the way the club operates?
I mean, we watched Arteta, didn't we, earlier, towards the end of last season, and he was very much urging the club to speculate, to accumulate, I guess, knowing full well that if you don't try and buy and recruit decent players that get you up to Champions League level, the gap will only widen. I think in this respect, at least getting one of the two main targets helps maintain a sense that we are going in the right direction. But yeah, I mean, Jesus, the club now needs to deliver on the pitch, right? And there's never probably been a tougher climate in which to do it. You look around the league and it's just so ridiculously competitive now. I mean, I'm not saying that the gap on City and Liverpool is closing, but, you know, in the environment, this post-COVID world, we've seen some pretty crazy results. We're also seeing some other teams strengthening, getting their act together after a few years of sort of messing around with new money that they've had, like Everton and stuff. So, I mean, look, it's going to be really, really, really difficult. I'm still not sure, even with Partey in the midfield, that we're necessarily a favourite to finish in the top four. I mean, I still think we're chasing after two positions, and it's sort of Chelsea, Tottenham, Manchester United, ourselves, and possibly one other, you know, a Leicester, it could be an Everton, who knows, but it's going to be really, really difficult. So I think it was a really, really important signing. I thought the timing of it was curious because I still can't quite get my head around why you would leave it to the last moment. It's not like we were bringing in a lot of money from the other deals that happened yesterday. You know, it feels to me like you could have sprung this deal a couple of weeks ago if all it meant was turning up at, you know, La Liga headquarters with a bag full of cash. I mean, it hasn't made too much of a difference in fairness. I mean, we've done pretty well at the start of the season. But yeah, really curious to see what happens next, that's for sure.
Yeah. James, it is one of those things which will, I guess, increase the pressure on Mikel Arteta because he has spoken about the need to be backed. And whatever way you want to put it, if the restructuring of the stadium debt enabled the liquid cash to be available to do a deal like this, that is kind of backing from the owners, as critical of as people have been of KSE and the Cronkies. You know, they've done what they needed to do in order to make a deal like this happen, right? So it does kind of put a bit of the pressure on Arteta. How do you feel he will respond to that? I don't think it's something that will bother him or faze him or anything like it. You know, he seems to relish the idea of taking on these challenges, whether it's playing a Liverpool, a Man City, a Chelsea, whatever it might be. But, you know, to set your sights high and aim high seems to be just kind of part of his DNA, his makeup.
Yeah, I mean, instinctively, I would say his confidence, his authority will be bolstered by this. He'll feel like, I asked for backing and I've had it. And I think it will only make him more determined to deliver. I do think there is, just to sort of sound a word of caution, you know, an interesting dynamic within the team where we do have some younger players and then we also have a number of players who are a little bit older. I mean, 27 is not old for Partey, but it does suggest that, you know, we need to be extracting value from that in the next 3 years. The same is true with the contract we've signed Aubameyang to, for example. So, you know, I do think it does apply a degree of pressure, but Arteta just has the character that suggests he's going to relish that. And I would also say he'll have the bit between his teeth. He'll feel like, well, I asked for something, I pushed for something, I got it. I don't think it will mean when the next window rolls around, he'll take his foot off the gas. I think he'll be pushing again because he's such an ultra-competitive person. And as Andrew says, this is an ultra-competitive league. I mean, you know, teams like Everton have really pushed on. And if Arsenal want to stand a chance of making that top four, I think even with the signing, it is going to be difficult. They need to keep moving forward, keep improving and keep spending ultimately, because that's so defining in terms of league position.
Right. Well, look, Thomas Partey's in. The midfield looks a lot healthier than it did. So just sticking with you, James, can you give me a mark out of 10 now for what you think this transfer window was like from an Arsenal point of view? And let me just lay out what we did. Torreira out on loan. Maybe we should separate them, I suppose. The incomings then. Partey, Gabriel, Alex Runarsson. Three players who've come in. I know
Willian
that there are
well.
Willian, of course. Jesus, how do I forget Willian?
Are you going to count the two loanees, Pablo and Cedric? Or
I suppose we can't because, I mean, we can because they were announced, but we can't because they've been at the club since January. So they don't really feel like summer signings, do they? They're not summer window signings.
The same is true of Ceballos, I guess, you know, but
well, yeah, the recapture of Ceballos, yeah. I mean, it is part of the summer business. So, you know, he was gone and he came back. So Partey, Gabriel, Runarsson, Willian, Ceballos, you know, on an incoming basis, what's your mark out of 10 for that?
For just the in, so not including the sales here, not including the players we signed to a new contract. I think I would give that, it's really hard to put it, I think I'd give that a 7.5.
That was what I was going to say. I wasn't quite sure if it was 7 or 8, so I would have just gone in the middle on that, because I still think, you know, there were a couple of things that we're not entirely sure about with the new players. Sample size with Gabriel, for example, is very small, even if I'm very impressed with what he's done so far. Runarsson, we haven't seen play. The Willian deal, the duration of it is still a problem for me, I think. You know, even if I can see what he might bring this season. So, yeah, Andrew, what's your mark out of 10?
Yeah, I'd probably go with something similar. I mean, I think what's really interesting about this window is it's probably the last of the old world, isn't it? I mean, like, these guys who've come in, as we've mentioned, were scouted by the former team. A lot of the groundwork probably was done before those guys went. I mean, by the sounds of things, Thomas Partey's been talking to Arsenal for a long time. You know, you don't just do all of the other details yesterday. I mean, that sounds like it had all been sorted. So this is the last of the old world, a bit of a blend into the new when you look at some of those other youngsters who came through. The guys that James did the exclusives on, what's it, George Lewis and Akinola and Jonathan Yazzie. And then we've seen a couple of other kids come in, haven't we, overnight, or one at least has come in overnight. So I think this is a weird window for us. Like, it really is a sort of, that's what the past was, maybe a little hint of what the future is. I'll be really, really interested to see how we tackle things this time next year. I mean, I'm not expecting much out of January's window. I mean, it's in 2 months' time. I think maybe some of the outgoing stuff might get sorted then. About a 7.5. I mean, we've sort of strengthened through the spine, haven't we? I guess, you know, we've got a goalkeeper. I don't know much about him. We've got a central defender. We've got a central midfielder plus Loney, Ceballos. We've got Willian sort of in front of them. So, I mean, there's reasonable, you know, experience and quality added there.
James, I mean, do you think, over the last couple of years, you know, we've seen a fair amount of instability at Arsenal. You know, the final years of the Arsene Wenger reign, if you like. And then we had this new structure put in place, and that's all gone now. The people who were there are all gone, basically. How much is stability going to be important now when the club look at what has been a very difficult transfer window because of all the circumstances that we all know? And that's, you know, some internal problems and some things that are completely out of our control when it comes to COVID-19 and everything else. I mean, do you expect perhaps, this isn't to go back to our head of sales thing or anything like that, but do you expect, you know, them to take stock? The head of football left. He's more the wheeler dealer guy. Do you expect perhaps something to be added to the executive team over the coming months to augment what Arteta and Edu have been doing during this period, in, you know, particularly the last 4 or 5 weeks?
My honest opinion is that I don't expect that. And the reason that I don't is because I think that is the role Edu envisages for himself. I think he wants to be the point of contact for Arsenal on all transfers. And, you know, I think that he is not going to bring in somebody who's going to effectively impinge on what he regards as his territory. Whether I'd like that to happen is a different question, because, you know, I think the more support you can get at that level, the better. And Arsenal, whatever we think of Sanier, did lose someone who was an experienced and skilled negotiator. Edu has done that job in the past in Brazil, but not to the same extent. So, yeah, I'd like maybe to see a few more additions, just because auditions, something in my acting career, additions, because I'd like to see a few more additions as well, actually. If anyone could arrange that, that'd be brilliant.
New James Bond film is still, you know, you could zip in there at the last minute, I reckon.
True. Phew, there's still time. I'd like to, yeah, but I'm not convinced it will happen. I think that the people, as often happens in any business, the people in authority, the people with the power, aren't in a hurry to dilute that.
What about outgoings, though, James? You know, there was talk of, say, Kolasinac leaving. There was talk of Socratis going on the last day where, you know, he'd been linked, I think, to Roma. There was a link to PSG, which didn't come to anything, which seemed a strange one. Shkodran Mustafi there. You know, we've got players heading into the last year of their contract. How much sympathy do you have for the club in terms of what they've tried to do to move players on? As it stands, we have 8 central defenders on the books, which is, you know, far too many. I remember, wasn't there a season where we went into the start of the campaign with only 2 or 3, I think, and Nacho Monreal was being drafted in as a center half and everything else. So we've gone quite the other way. How much is down to the particular circumstances, players that are difficult to move because they're, you know, older, on big wages, etc., COVID-19, and just our general ability to move players on?
It has been really hard. And, you know, if you look at the players we have got out, I mean, one that gets forgotten is Henrik Mkhitaryan. We did at least manage to get him off the wage bill.
We just let him go for nothing, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But I think his wage was so high that was a positive step.
200 grand a week, so...
Yeah, yeah. Emi Martinez, we sold for good money, but he would not have been top of anybody's list of who you'd want to sell. You know, the centre-back situation that you mentioned, there are a few names, Kolasinac, Socratis, Mustafi, Guendouzi has gone on loan, Torreira has gone on loan. It has been a struggle. Mesut Ozil, of course, completely intransigent, insists on not seeing out the final year of his contract. So it has been hard. Arsenal aren't alone in that. Like I was reading about Chelsea this morning, they've still got players like Danny Drinkwater on the books, you know, and they're on high salaries. Mm. It's the same problem as us. You can't find someone to take it over, particularly outside the Premier League. But yeah, I mean, maybe 7.5 sounded a bit sort of a bit conservative, but I can't help but, you know, weigh the transfer window as a whole. And I think the outgoings, you know, have not been what Arsenal would have hoped for. And who knows what we might have ended up with if they had. So if I had to give these a mark out of 10, you know, probably 4 or 5, really. I mean, nothing like the exodus they probably hoped for.
No, Andrew, thoughts on the outgoings and maybe a little rating from you? You know, Guendouzi going for, you know, I think we did get some kind of a small loan fee for him from Hertha Berlin. Torreira, we're getting a loan fee from Atletico Madrid. So there is a few million coming in from that. But those, I think, at the start of the window might have been two players that Arsenal would have perhaps envisaged receiving reasonable fees for. I remember not just a few weeks ago, we were talking about, well, if you get back most of what you paid for Torreira, that'd be reasonable. Instead, we're getting a couple of million in a loan fee. Guendouzi, you know, start of the window, people were talking about tens of millions for Guendouzi, but that's not forthcoming because nobody was prepared to pay that kind of money or any kind of money, it seems, for Guendouzi. So, your thoughts on the outgoings?
I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because we've been talking about, you know, buying players at a certain age so that they have a sell-on value. And we've just gone and proved that we couldn't get any of that value out of those players, despite buying an 18-year-old and a 22-year-old when they, you know, Guendouzi and Torreira joined. And we're basically scrambling around for a few million quid in loan fees a couple of years later. I know the circumstances are a bit weird. Not great, I think. I think this window will be a bit of a learning process for Edu. And to be honest, he really had his hands full because this was, the first full window, summer window, really in his control. You know, when Sanle departed, I'm sure, you know, he hadn't been expected to be running it full, you know, fully on his own with a team and stuff. So, and I think they did obviously put the emphasis on trying to get a few players in. Again, you know, I'm slightly confused by, let's say, the Saliba thing. You know, we obviously decided after a couple of weeks that he may be better off being somewhere else. Then we tried to get shot of him back to Saint-Étienne, apparently, but we ran out of time. Mm. So when you're sort of running out of time to get stuff that you want to get done, that's not a great look. So, I mean, that plus the fact that, I mean, I'm not a great fan of just sacking off Mkhitaryan's contract like that when in January there was a 10 million euro offer on the table, apparently. You know, I guess Mavropanos went for a small fee as well. Yeah, I'm kind of down at 3 and 4. I think what was really interesting is there was a lot more structure and organization in the academy level. You know, we got rid of, we sent a lot of players out quite early on and continued to kind of do that throughout the entire process. And I think that maybe speaks to the academy being a little bit more organized under Pear because he's settled. He's got a team working for him now.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd say on that is that the academy recruitment changes preceded the first team ones. The scouts were all kind of laid off effectively, you know, some time before the first team ones. And so I agree with you. The academy are doing some quite interesting things. The loans outs have been good. They've made some, you know, some intriguing signings, shall we say. And maybe that's a forerunner for what Edu's vision is for the recruitment department for the first team. I mean, he needs to put that in place now because Arsenal have kind of muddled through this window with what they already had.
Yeah. I have to say the youth recruitment, and this isn't to do any of the players a disservice, it just reminded me a bit of when I used to play Football Manager and you just buy random young kids from clubs and hope that they develop into, you know, superstars. But let's see. Let's see what happens there. James, how do you view the William Saliba thing, his potential departure? How much of that was predicated on him not quite being ready yet versus the amount of central defenders that we have in the squad? For example, if we had just four central defenders, do you think we would have been less willing to loan him out? And in that context, how do we view, with hindsight, of course, the fact that we paid £28 million for him last summer?
I think assessing the transfer value is really difficult still, simply because we don't know what he will be in 5 years' time. But I think clearly if you put that kind of investment in someone, I think Arsenal did not do that envisaging he would spend a second season on loan. We can say that with complete confidence. As for his situation, I think it is partly about the number of centre-backs, but I think it is also about the fact he doesn't look ready. I also think there was a real impetus to get him back to France because of, you know, the personal side of it. And I'm just so grateful that those rumours about a potential loan move to Fulham didn't materialise that would have been the worst possible outcome, I think, for him to go into a struggling team in the Premier League and find that very, very difficult. I think the likelihood is, you know, maybe he'll be involved a little bit in the Europa League group stages here and there. When you look at some of the opponents we've drawn, I think, you know, he's got a pretty good chance of being involved in those games. And I think the loan situation will be revisited in January and it'll be dependent on who else we can get out. But I would not be surprised at all if in 2 months' time when the window reopens, he's headed back to France again.
What about a championship loan? Because it's still possible to do deals.
I'm not sure about that. I mean, the thing is, if Saliba's issue is that he doesn't look ready, the championship is actually a really demanding league.
Yeah.
I think in some ways it will be just as demanding for him as the French top flight. So it's potentially an option. I mean, if you look down in the championship, there's some really good footballing teams. I mean, Brentford are a great example. I'm trying to think who else you've got down there. Bournemouth are down there. So I wouldn't rule that out personally. It'll be interesting to see if that's something that Arsenal consider. And obviously, they do need to move some players out still. They're not going to have room in their squad for all the non-EU players they have. And I wonder if a few will consider a move to the Championship. If any of them do, I think Saliba is probably the most likely.
Yeah. Andrew, there are a couple, aren't there, as well, who potentially could make that move. You know, young players. I'm thinking someone like Joe Willock in particular, who I like, but feels like a player who could do with, you know, regular football, starting regular games week in, week out. He can't go on loan to a Premier League club now because this extended window only allows deals between Premier League clubs and EFL clubs and not between two Premier League clubs. So, you know, it might be considered a step down, but when you look at the quality, as James said, of some of the teams who play in the Championship, a team like Leeds who were there last season, you know, obviously a fantastic place to play your trade if you're working with somebody like Bielsa. You know, there is the opportunity for one or two of those younger players like Willock, perhaps even Emile Smith Rowe, maybe Reece Nelson, depending on you know, the state of the squad to play regularly.
Yeah, I mean, maybe one, but I can't see Willock going, only because we've got 6 Europa League games between now and the next window opening, and then we'll also have a Carabao Cup quarterfinal game as well. So that's 7 additional games on top of the league stuff, and the window opens in a couple of months. I think, you know, if you were the player, you'd probably be thinking, I don't want to rush a decision, or, you know, there's no need to rush a decision at this point. Let's see what happens in the new year. I think if Willock's not playing then, I mean, he played him like 44 times last season, so he's like a real bona fide member of the first team squad. I think with Smith Rowe, I could see it happening. I think that's a shame, but he seems to pick up injuries at exactly the wrong time, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Little niggly kind of injuries just before he might actually get a game. Nelson, again, yeah, I think, I mean, there'd be a lot of Premier League teams lining up to take someone like Reece Nelson. A lot of European teams wanting him as well. So, you know, he may be thinking, well, I can get through the next couple of months rather than going down to the Championship. I could just go and find a bigger, better place to play football next year. So I'm not expecting to see a huge amount. Maybe a couple of other youngsters could go out, you know, guys that don't come off the tip of the tongue right now. But I think things could quieten down. I think everyone might want a bit of a rest as well after all this.
Yeah, fair point. Sticking with you, Andrew, James mentioned the non-EU players. So we have a situation where we have to name a 25-man squad for the Europa League. That has to be done by midnight tonight. But there's an October 20th deadline for the Premier League squad to be named, where there are a maximum of 17 non-EU players allowed in the squad, or non-homegrown players, rather, allowed in the squad. As it stands, there are 19 in the squad that Mikel Arteta has at his disposal right now. So how much is the manager going to have to think about who he leaves out? And do you have any thoughts on who might be the unfortunate pair?
I mean, off the top of my head, I can see Sokratis, who obviously I think was open to leaving and has fallen down the pecking order on the centre-back front. I can see him being one potentially left out. Would be really harsh on him. I did wonder whether you could come to an agreement where you cancelled his contract outside of the window and he could move as a free agent. I don't know if that's possible, but it was something that sprung to mind. And then I guess the other one is Mr. Ozil, isn't it? I mean, if Arteta has literally no intention of playing him, there's no point in including him in the squad. And it kind of just makes everything very clear for everyone. You stop getting asked about it because he's not in the squad anymore.
James?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think through the names in my head. I mean, Sokratis is an interesting one. And I think Andrew's point about could he even leave outside of the window? I saw Danny Welbeck's come to an agreement with Watford for his contract to be cancelled. I think a few players might be in that situation.
Jack Wilshere, of course, with West
Ham. And I think the talk was yesterday that that's what PSG wanted Sokratis to do. Certainly that's what the French reports were indicating, but they couldn't arrange it in time. I think he'd be a contender to miss out. I mean, I think it's difficult to look past Ozil, isn't it? I think he's not being considered for a selection, very, very clearly. And so this would be just a formalisation of something that's clearly already effectively a policy. So, I mean, look, it'll be a story if and when it happens. But I think that that's the direction that we currently look headed for. And I think in some ways Arsenal would have probably liked to avoid the problem. You know, if they managed to move Sokratis and Kolasinac on, for example, suddenly, you know, there's no issue. But yeah. That's not the situation as things stand.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't make the squad, you're essentially writing off the, you know, the last months of his contract. And what do you do? How does that play out? Where does it leave the player? Where does it leave the club? It's a tricky one because the optics around that one and the furore it would cause would be something to behold, I think.
I think they would love to have avoided
the
situation. But, you know, that they haven't been able to move enough players on. And you have to say, like, somebody like Kolasinac, who they were very, very open to selling, it's also very clear that Mikel Arteta, you know, when the occasion presents itself, is very happy to select him. So it would kind of be, you know, strange if he suddenly said, I'm going to exclude him entirely. There's already a player who is excluded.
It's possible with the Europa League, so the UEFA one, because this will only last up until the end of the group stages, that you could say one of the guys who plays all the time in the Premier League isn't going to be in the Europa League squad. We back ourselves to get out of it.
Register Aubameyang or something like that.
Exactly. You could work your way around it and say, well, Aubameyang's not needed in the group stages of the Europa League. We've got the rest of the squad all there, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the other thing, I mean, usually you'd also look out and not include someone who was injured. And the weird thing is, I guess, with the long-term injuries, is Chambers is homegrown. Martinelli is...
Under 21.
And the others are all now just about on the cusp of coming back, aren't they?
Yeah, well, look, plenty of thinking for Mikel Arteta to do. He doesn't seem afraid of making big decisions that he feels are right for the team, regardless of what other people might think of them. So we'll wait and see how this plays out. Of course, it is October the 20th, and maybe some things can happen before then, which might remove some of the aggravation of a decision that he might have to make. Very finally, though, Andrew, I'll ask you first. I suppose, as we've touched on, some of the business that we've done this summer indicates a desire or a push to get back into the top four now. The Aubameyang deal, the Partey deal at 27, someone like Willian coming in, you know, with all the experience that he's had at that level. You know, there are benefits to that, of course, as well. When you have experienced players around, they can really help develop the younger players. But it does feel like they're going for top four again. And perhaps that is a bit short term, but maybe there's no other way to operate from an Arsenal point of view right now. They need to get back in there and need that revenue. So out of 10, how confident are you now with this squad as it stands after the window has closed that we might be able to achieve that this season?
6.5. Okay. And I think it's going to be all about keeping our heads while those around us lose theirs a little bit. I think we just need to take draws in games that we might have lost before. I think we're going to lose a few games along the way. We need to compartmentalize those. We need to stay solid. But I think you looked at a couple of the teams who qualified for the Champions League last year and snuck in there at the end. It wasn't about being a fantastic team. It was about just trying to string a few runs of results together. And, you know, I think we just need to try and stay steady, consistent. And if we can do that, I think we might just do it.
James?
Yeah, I think Andrew's nailed it. You know, it's about staying in the fight. I think it's going to be incredibly competitive. And I don't think it's something, well, of course, we can't take it for granted. It's not something we've had. I guess about 60%, yeah. Mm. And most of that comes from the coach. You know, he really does give me belief that we can push on and do this. And I think, you know, we've talked about the signings, we've talked about the players out. I honestly think the contract extensions of Saka and Aubameyang are a huge part of what Arsenal achieved this summer. And Aubameyang in particular will be essential if we're going to make it. Mm. What do you rate our chances like?
I'm sort of between a 6 and a 7. I think the early signs are promising. I think if we've got players or have brought a player in who can, I don't mean to say that Partey could be transformative, but I think Partey gives Mikel Arteta the opportunity to play and set up his team in a way which is more in tune with what he wants. You know, he was quite clear the other day, wasn't he, about, you know, the kind of football that he wants to play, but, you know, I have to get results with the players that I have. And there's an element of pragmatism to that and, you know, trying to extract the maximum from players who, you know, a lot of whom are kind of Europa League level players to get back into the Champions League. I just feel that maybe Partey and some of the development of the young players, and if we can get Aubameyang scoring again and we can get more out of Nicolas Pepe, you know, there is room for improvement. I think the Sheffield United game was encouraging because it was a game we drew last season. It was a game we lost away from home last season. And those are the kind of gains that we need to make. You know, if we turned 4 or 5 of those draws last season into single goal wins, we would have been there or thereabouts in terms of Champions League. even though, you know, what came in the first few months of the season was absolutely crazy, you know. So I'm sort of fluctuating between a 6 and a 7, but like you, I think I get a fair amount of confidence from Mikel Arteta. So look, let's see. We don't have to worry about transfers or transfer deadline day or anything like that for another 3 months or so. So we can just concentrate on the football, which of course is what everybody wants. But as ever, James, thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Andrew, thank you.
Thank you. Great chatting.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Andrew. You can find him on Twitter at @aallensport and, of course, writing stuff over on Arsblog News. And James, who is at Gunnerblog, of course. So there you go. There is an extra bonus podcast for you. Talking about transfers, talking about transfer deadline day, the new signing, who is an exciting player, somebody who I think will bring an extra dimension to this team and the way we might play. It is a bit of a shame we've got a couple of weeks for it to happen because we're in the middle of an international break now. Lots of players going away with their countries. Fingers crossed they all come back safe and sound. Fingers crossed they all come back healthy. Obviously, the more they're outside the Premier League bubble and the smaller bubble that they exist in, you know, when they're playing for their clubs, the greater the chance of exposure to COVID-19. It is, I'm sure, as you all know, on the rise again in many places. So please keep yourself safe, wash your hands, wear a mask when you need to, protect yourself and protect other people too. And let's keep fingers crossed that in a couple of weeks' time, we see Thomas Partey absolutely take Manchester City apart as we go there and inflict upon them the defeat that is long, long, long overdue. Right, as ever, thank you very much indeed for listening. Really appreciate it. Patreon is patreon.com/arsblog. We've got more to come later this week, of course. There's a regular Arscast on Friday. Keep an eye on the site for profiles of Thomas Partey. We've got some stuff coming up on arsblog.com. But until the next one, take it easy, folks. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.